flu on a commercial airline. The Biden administration is opening an overflow facility for unaccompanied migrant children apprehended at the U.S.-Mexico border. The Health and Human Services Department will reopen a facility in Carrizo Springs, Texas, that can accommodate about 700 children and can be expanded if necessary. United States Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is calling for a meeting of top financial regulators this week to discuss market volatility driven by retail trading in GameStop and other stocks as early as Thursday. This is USA Radio News.
Hey, travelers, do you want to save money on your next flight? Then pick up the phone and call. That's right, call, because the best prices are not online. They're with SmartFares. See, SmartFares has special deals with the airlines. When they have unsold seats, they use SmartFares to fill them. So you get airline tickets at ridiculously low prices. Our prices are too low to publish online. With the extra money you'll save, you can book another trip or treat yourself to dinner or shopping. So stop searching all of those travel sites to find the lowest price on your next flight. Let one of our SmartFares expert travel agents find ridiculously low prices for you. Call SmartFares today and get the best price on your next flight. Guaranteed. Also, save up to 50% off business and first class tickets.
800-871-3291. 800-871-3291. Again, that's 800-871-3291.
Good morning. This is Nicole Smith. You're listening to Happy to Help on Hunterdon Chamber Radio. We are talking today with Colleen Dewar of Shifting Gears Consulting. Good morning, Colleen.
Good morning, Nicole. Thanks for having me.
Yes, and Colleen Dewar is a doer, and you do so many things, and you've got a company called Shifting Gears Consulting. And so why don't you tell us a little bit about your nonprofit background, your career, and then how you started your own firm, and what give us an update on what's going on in the nonprofit world.
Sure. So so I actually started my career in banking, because when you graduate with a degree in communications, that's a logical next step, isn't it? And after a career in banking, which I really wasn't necessarily a great fit for me, I learned a ton, which I think has really been helpful for me in the nonprofit world, because I have that business background. So I shifted over into the nonprofit world. I worked for the Hunterdon Medical Center Foundation for a couple years, then went on to help a friend start what was then a very tiny grassroots nonprofit called what is now America's Grow-A-Row.
Wow.
So that's very familiar to a lot of people in the Hunterdon community and beyond. Great experience in terms of just applying for that 501c3 status and the real roots of how you start a nonprofit, no pun intended. And then I moved into a position as the first ever development director at Family Promise of Hunterdon County. So working with the issues of family homelessness and homelessness in the county and in the country. And again, really great experience in social services. So I had this, what I felt was a really good background, loved the nonprofit sector. But when I left Family Promise, I sort of thought to myself, I'd love to just be working on my own and be that support system and advocate for nonprofits. They are classically understaffed organizations. And so I just have to say out loud, anybody who complains about staff salaries, it just hurts my heart. So we really need to educate the community about the importance of really not just adequately staffing nonprofits, but think of them, they are a business. And they're in the business of, whatever it is, helping people, helping animals, advocacy, any kind of, they're doing really, really valuable work. And so their employees should get paid for that. But given that they are classically understaffed, there's always these looming projects that I'm telling you, in most cases, my clients know what needs to be done. They just can't. They're like one-armed paper hangers. They can't get it done. So that's what I do, is I provide that background support, mostly in development. So it could be, I hate to say just grant writing, because there's a lot more to it. It's that pulling the lens back, taking a couple steps back. Are your programs well-defined? Do you have a budget for each one of your programs? Do you have a compelling needs statement that says, why is this work important? Why is this organization the best organization to be doing this work? So those are the pieces that are often maybe missing, but maybe just not really gelled to the point where an organization can then go and make those asks, whether it's of foundations, corporations, the community at large. So those are the pieces that I try to put into place. I also do a lot of work on communications because I really believe that when you have a strong website and you have good marketing materials and you have a decent social media presence and all of those are consistent and giving good messaging and talking about the work that you do, not just that you need money. Mm. When you're doing all of those things well, it leads to better fundraising. So those are kind of the pieces that I do, maybe some strategic planning, that sort of thing. But I think at my heart, I'm just like love being an advocate like you for the nonprofit sector. These are hardworking people that do really good work. So what can I do to support that?
I love that. And I'm the same as where I worked in business and finance and accounting and, you know, and then took a break to have my kids. But then I literally fell into the nonprofit world. Like I had always volunteered growing up and things like that, but I had no idea. There's a, just like any industry, there's a whole set of, you know, terms and structure and
acronyms.
Players.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. No, that drives me insane. But I mean, well, just any industry, when people just start rattling off acronyms, I'm like, oh, I have no idea what you're talking about. But, that I love this sector, this environment, and you're right, there's so many talented people, but they're just strapped so thin. So why don't we veer into a little bit about volunteerism, because you know that's what this show is about, like getting people to volunteer. And volunteering 20 years ago is not the same as volunteering today, especially now with the virtual volunteering opportunities.
For sure.
And so if people want to volunteer, or there's nonprofits out there that are looking for volunteers, like how is this whole portion of this industry that changing right now to adapt to make the best use of people's time and give them fulfillment that they want and the nonprofits the help they need?
Well, I think that there's two, we have to come at this from two different angles, or for two different parts of the spectrum, I guess, from the volunteers' perspective and also from the nonprofits' perspective. I think that, you know, like you said, it shifted in 20 years, 50 years, whatever it was. We don't necessarily have those, I'm going to call it a dosed out volunteer opportunity as much as we used to. You know, it's not just that case of I'm going to do this thing and it's going to take me 2 hours and here's exactly what I need to do. Volunteer needs are much more varied and intense and require a lot more flexibility, I guess, on the part of the volunteer and a deeper understanding on the part of the volunteer, the need to do the work that needs to be done and not assume, and I'm not bashing, maybe I am. I'm going to try not to bash.
It's okay.
So I'm going to be delicate here, but I think that we as volunteers have to understand that it's not going to be that perfectly prescribed volunteer opportunity as much anymore. Mm-hmm. It's going to be things that maybe aren't that, you know, here's the 2 hours or here's the task that needs to be completed. It might be more of a leadership role that's needed. And then everybody freaks out. Oh, no, I can't be a leader. Yes, you can. And leadership is a big, broad bucket of things. But a lot of nonprofits need help with things that that might be social media. It might be writing. It could be any kind of support work that helps that executive director and that small staff just keep plugging along. And I think on the other side of the spectrum, the nonprofit has to start understanding that if you want that different kind of volunteerism, if you want someone who can work in Canva for you and design Instagram posts and things like that. If you want that, you have to formalize that to the best extent you can. And I always recommend to nonprofits that they really write job descriptions, because I think it's only fair that if you're, you know, what I described on the volunteer side is a bit nebulous, right? But I think it's only fair that if you're going to ask that person to be flexible, to be creative, to be understanding, that you give them the structure, as much structure as you can, and you lay out your expectations. Because there's a lot of questions coming up now that I'm seeing on different blogs and posts and social media sites about firing volunteers.
What?
Yeah. I mean, you sometimes do have situations where, you know, volunteers are pushing boundaries. Maybe it's inappropriate. Maybe they're causing more problems than they're solving. They might not be showing up for a shift on a regular basis and you know, maybe have an attitude of, well, I'm not getting paid, so it's not that big a deal. Yeah. So if you're, you know, just like a job description, right, at a company, mm-hmm, if you mm-hmm. walk into a position, you should know what the expectations are in terms of, you know, what you need to do, who you report to, what needs to be done, when it needs to be done, the mm-hmm. quality of work. I think it's fair enough to offer a job description. I think a lot of nonprofits maybe get a bit squeamish about that, thinking it's too demanding. But really, if you think about it, if you, Nicole, were to walk into any sort of position that was beyond sort of, you know, a shift at a food pantry, something that was more involved, or maybe it was work, you know, work at home, because that's what we have now. Mm-hmm. A lot of those volunteer opportunities are sort of work from home and mm-hmm. send things in. Wouldn't you feel better knowing what was expected?
Oh, definitely. And I love training. Like, I used to do some software training and custom software training. And then when one of my first jobs was a waitress at TGI Fridays. And for literally the waitressing job, you had to go through 2 weeks of training. Mm-hmm. Like, every morning we were there with our little binders, and I loved it. Like, I love training. I love receiving training, and I love working on training and giving training. So this only makes sense. It's not like, you know, you're just like, okay, just go do something, right? You know,
right.
I mean,
we'll be super grateful when it's done, you know? Yes. Whenever you have time.
Right, right. And we were talking about this. We're going to do a case study on me and Reem Tareed today a little bit, because I've spent the last 10 years with a couple of my close friends, and we've had small groups, and we built the Reem Tareed New Jersey chapter. And ours is an indirect form of volunteering, because none of the programs are here in the U.S. They're all in Asia and Africa. So it's a whole different mindset. It's not showing up at the soup kitchen. It's creative. It's running events. It's cultivation, and it's all kinds of different things. So, and there is a whole plethora of options, even if you aren't reading to someone on their lunch break or whatever. So I'm trying to, for the next phase of our chapter, I want to invite more people in, more millennials, and create some job descriptions, create a binder, like an annual plan and things like that. So that's what I'm trying to do here. And hopefully I can appeal to any suggestions that you have, any other ones that you've not mentioned yet, or anybody listening who's ready to rock it with Reem Tareed.
Well, it's obviously a great organization, and you have a lot of information on what makes it so great. And, you know, I think writing that job description, but leaving it, you know, obviously what you've done with this chapter is different than what other chapter leaders have done, mm-hmm. right? So mm-hmm. a great example is the breakfast that you organized with the author. And, you know, just a plug for Nicole here, everyone, that I went to the in-person
breakfast with Fran.
Mm-hmm. And then I attended the virtual event this year. And both of them were really, really extraordinary. And in both cases, I was introduced to an author that I was not familiar with. I had heard of Fran's book, but I hadn't read it. And so I was inspired to read it. Not just read it, but buy it for my daughter and my three nieces. Because I just thought it was really, really good. And she did such a nice presentation. So what you gave me as an attendee was more than a meal, right? So I think the creativity that you brought and bringing an element of education and intelligence to it was really, really valuable. But that was something that you chose to do, right? The next chapter leader could decide to go with that because it worked and here's the plan. Or they could say, you know what, I'm going to veer here, I'm going to do that, and that's okay too, right? I mean, if you're laying out the minimum expectation for that position, which I imagine has something to do with fundraising, awareness, yeah. growing your constituent base, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Expanding your social media profile, mm-hmm. Your hits on your website, that sort of thing. You know, those are metrics which I think everyone can relate to, mm-hmm. And that's helpful. But you're also leaving it loose enough to say, you know, you don't have to do this breakfast in October.
Well, it's already scheduled, just for the record.
Oh,
for this. Well, and because I've got the author. I'm not going to reveal it yet, but it's very exciting. And we do the breakfast every October around International Day of the Girl, because Reem Tareed helps teach kids how to read, but it also supports girls in secondary school, because then they'll marry later and have fewer children and teach their children to read, and they'll earn more money, and the whole universe benefits. So, and that's kind of be my baby that I want to hold on to and still run unless the new person just, you know, or some of the new leadership says, no, we need to go in a different direction. I'm open to that, but I'm still, but anyway, so that's very good advice. And it was a fun, I dreamed about that breakfast for 5 years and I was just waiting, or I knew it was coming. I was waiting for the right author, and Fran like literally popped up out of nowhere, like on my radar. So,
well, and I should also mention that one of the big things that I loved about that event, and really any event that's similar, is how tied to that mission it was. Right. So, you know, it's tied to International Day of the Girl. You have a female author who is inspiring women. I mean, it just all fell into place. So that I really, really appreciate, because I think sometimes nonprofits struggle. I think the word gala is overused.
Yeah, I didn't want to do a gala. I knew I didn't want to do a golf outing. I didn't want to do a gala. So bacon and breakfast. That was
right. And coffee. You did it at a time when people can come. I mean, it's reasonable to think that you could go to a breakfast and then go to work.
Yep.
So all those, and that was very considerate as well. So I just thought, you know, I think if I was giving advice to anyone, it would be, you know, really think about those fundraisers and what value they bring. Because you brought up the term friendraiser, which sometimes I feel like is overused, but it's appropriate because, you know, I've done fundraisers before that don't bring in a ton of money, but they have a great impact in terms of community awareness. Mm-hmm. So they are valuable. They raise more friends. You add more to your database. You expand your network of people that you're communicating your mission to. So that is absolutely valuable.
Well, and it's an opportunity for people to kick the tires, you know, right? So maybe they don't know. Yeah, exactly. So maybe they don't know much about your organization and they don't want to, you know, say, I'm not going to buy a $300 ticket to this, or I don't want to, you know, walk in there and expect them to just, you know, bombard me with give, give, give. I just want to have a good time, meet some people. And the other thing I've been kind of touting lately is that, you know, there's been all this focus on find your purpose and your passion, and people are like, I don't know what it is. And I mean, literally mine hit me like a lightning bolt. So I was lucky that way. But the other thing I was saying, well, find your people, because it's all about community. It's all about interaction. And right now we're more limited in how we can gather, but find people that you gel with, find your tribe, and maybe, you know, maybe you find your mission and your passion through the people that you want to associate with. Like, I mean, I've got the whole package at Roomtreat. I'm just like over the moon with everything that it does and all the people that I met all over the world. So, but that's everywhere. Like, it's available to anyone, anywhere, right?
That's a great way to frame it, you know, and that's a great, you know, tying back to those volunteer opportunities is, you know, maybe you don't want to jump in with a leadership role and you're justified in doing that because you just want to find out more about the organization. And, you know, I've been part of organizations. I've done some volunteer work for, in one case, and I was offered a job and I said, no, thank you. And it was really because I loved what they did. I loved the work, but I found the board to be a little stodgy, and I like to bring the funk. I like to do things differently, more creatively. Hey, have we thought about this? And so that wasn't going to be a good fit for either one of us. You know, I was just going to frustrate them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's a really great point, is find your people, find your passion. And then, you know, maybe you will find yourself in a leadership role, or maybe you'll be inspired to take on more, or maybe you'll end up in a leadership role and you won't even know it.
That's the best, right? This is, we've got a lot more to talk about, but we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterton at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterton, the voice for mental health in Hunterton County.
You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterton County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located at the historic Large House, 119 Main Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programs.
Good morning. This is Nicole Smith. You're listening to Happy to Help on Hunterdon Chamber Radio. We're on Facebook Live today. You can find us at Happy Hunterdon. And I'm talking today with Colleen Dewar, and she is a doer, and she's an owner of Shifting Gears Consulting, shiftinggears.consulting.com.
Yes.
Okay.
You got it.
Okay. And so she's got a long background in nonprofit work. She's got the consulting firm that deals in nonprofit work. And so we're going to address the COVID in the room or in the world, and tell us a little bit about how that's affected giving and volunteering. And
yeah, I think it surely is a good news, bad news situation. And with regards to the volunteer front, what I'm seeing certainly is nonprofits just being forced to reduce the number of volunteers just for safety reasons. And not just reduce the number of volunteers, but shift on a dime. I mean, I'm seeing changes happen over a weekend in one case, in 2 weeks in another case, completely changing the way they do business, the way they collect in-kind donations, the way they organize those donations, the way they rely on volunteers, the way they distribute if they're a distribution organization. That can be a real struggle. And, they're also, I'm sure, concerned about, will we get those volunteers back once we are allowed to welcome them in en masse? The good news is that what I'm seeing is a lot of people who are either out of work, maybe furloughed, or have, either like a temporary reduction in hours or maybe just find themselves with, 3 hours a day that they're not commuting, mm-hmm. are giving that time. And that's a really great thing to see. And I encourage anyone who's in those situations to think about that, because I have to tell you, I'm volunteering with someone now who's out of work. And guess what? We're connected on LinkedIn. And guess what? She's looking to work in a similar industry as my husband. So that's not to say that I'm going to get her a job. I'm just saying that this is a form of networking. And mm-hmm. so, if you have the opportunity to give your commute time or give your extra time, now's a good time to do that. So, how do you do that? Well, you look on websites and see, what needs there are. Or if you have a passion, you start looking around to find organizations that are like that. Other organizations I'm a volunteer with, I'm a volunteer advocate for CASA Shaw, which is mm-hmm. Court-appointed special advocates. Mm-hmm. We're still working with those kids. We're still seeing those kids. We're just seeing them on Zoom, not in mm-hmm. person. So, mm-hmm. The work continues in a lot of cases. And I hope that they get back to, those fully staffed volunteer positions in warehouses, in food pantries, in soup kitchens mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. But meanwhile, there's a lot of needs that can be done behind the scenes. There's we talked about job descriptions and volunteer training. That might be something that a nonprofit could kind of, really gel. And that might be a short-term project. Mm-hmm. You're not committing to this big long-term right. thing. It's a short-term project. Maybe it's, work at home, guidelines and that sort of thing. Anyway, I think there's, like I said, a good news, bad news. With regards to fundraising, again, I think that's a good news, bad news. The bad news is your nonprofits can't really do their galas, their golf outings. They might be doing them, but they're, you know, probably significantly smaller. Mm-hmm. So, you know, think about that. Think about the organizations that you used to support with that ticket or that purchase, and make sure that they're okay. The good news that I'm seeing, and I think this is extraordinarily good news for the sector, and I hope it continues, is that a lot of corporation and foundation funders are giving more. They've realized that they can no longer have, many of them, not all of them, I wish all of them would. They can't necessarily have these big, onerous, time-consuming grant applications when organizations are scrambling to serve more people. Because in most cases, especially in social services, you are serving more people. More people on unemployment, more people without work or have reduced work. They're going to have more needs for whether it's a diaper bank, a food pantry. There's all sorts of needs that are increasing. And they, you know, I think funders realize that. And so they very quickly started releasing more. A foundation, I don't know if a lot of people are aware of this, is only obligated to give 5% of its assets every year. Mm-hmm. That's it. That is your minimum obligation. Well, if you do the math and you realize what the market typically provides in terms of an investment return, you realize that that coffer is growing and growing and growing, and you're giving your minimum, but that's growing and growing and growing. And I think a lot of foundations realize, you know what, this is maybe inappropriate. So they are giving more money with less onerous application processes. So I think that's a really good thing, and I'd like to see that trend continue because, you know, as I said in the beginning, I'm so sensitive to nonprofit salaries and, you know, the eagle eye that people put on that. But then you're asking them to do these hours and hours and hours of grant applications to get, you know, what is sometimes maybe $5,000 or $10,000, maybe $2,000 or $3,000, and then doing, you know, a 6-month progress report, a 12-month progress report. And, you know, all those things are very time consuming. So it's I'm very sensitive to that. So I like seeing the trend of opening the wallet a little more and reducing the onerousness of requesting that money. I think those are good trends.
Yeah. And I haven't really experienced the whole grant writing process and all that. When I was in business, we had RFPs and that was about enough, right? And so the good thing about being with Room to Read and what they have always done is focused on private donations and corporate, you know, without strings attached, without an onerous process and without, you know, and because I think, I don't know what the exact stats are, but the amount of corporate and foundation giving is just a tiny, tiny piece of the overall giving. I mean, it's mostly from individuals, right? Bulk of it. So if you just shift your mindset, like, let's go after the individuals or, you know, your network, you know, and go that way. But that, cause then it comes without strings attached, and with the new millennial generation coming up and starting to make more money, and they're all givers from what I've read and what I know, you know, start generating, you know, $10, $20 gifts, and kind of then you get more momentum that way, mm-hmm. and then it'll add up. So that's another approach to take.
Yeah, for right? sure. And I think that's a good point is don't be so focused on or determined for those big gifts. Start, you know, looking for those mid to small range, because one, they can grow. Mm-hmm. And two, we now have technology at our disposal. We have databases that we can work from. We have email thank yous. We have websites. We have social media. We have all these ways to show gratitude that aren't necessarily super time consuming. And I think that's a message I would give to the entire nonprofit community is I have seen some nonprofits through COVID just asking for money. And I think it's really important that you tell people what you're doing and why it's important. Mm-hmm. And then once every couple of times you ask, you know, you suggest on how they can support mm-hmm. that work. But I think it's disingenuous to just ask for money. Tell us about what you're doing.
You right. know? And tie a dollar story. Figure to, stories are huge, right? Yeah. About who you're helping and why and how it's changed their life. But also tying a dollar figure to, you know, X buys 20 books or, you know, $30 pays for a month of food supply for this family or what, you know, whatever, tying it to an actual tangible thing.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there's two, you know, a lot of funders certainly want data, They're very focused on outcomes, not outputs, outcomes. It's not how much food you gave. It's the impact you had on that family. Okay. So data is really, really important. And I think it's important that nonprofits focus on that. But at the same time, telling that story. Mm-hmm. Because different people respond to different things. And so if you're providing all of that information, and again, I keep coming back to this, what is the why do you exist? Why are you important? Why is it important that you do this work? What makes you different? What is the needs? What is your mission? And why is it so critical that we all support this mission? And, you know, I encourage people to also look around. You know, a lot of focus has been on feeding programs, and rightly so, because those numbers are definitely increasing. But there's other organizations like Room to Read, like Casa Shaw, that, you know, maybe people aren't, it isn't top of mind. But think about things like domestic violence and mental health needs and suicide prevention and all of the impacts that this has beyond the imagery that you're seeing on the news about lines at food pantries and soup kitchens. So again, not to diminish the need there, because it's definitely increasing, but also be aware of everything else that's going on. There's advocacy work going on all over the country that is really desperately needed, and needed even more. So, you know, people are doing advocacy work for homelessness. You know, that's becoming, that has been a problem in our country, and it's going to get worse. Mm-hmm. So, I encourage people to really, you know, really sort of broaden that scope and look around and see what you're passionate about.
Yeah. And through your network, I always say, if you don't know where to start, you know, talk to some people at your church, talk to your neighbors, talk to your coworkers. You know, if you see a friend who's just blissfully happy doing something, or talks about their volunteer work or what they're doing or who they met, then ask them about that. And we just came off of, last week was Princeton Community Works, organized by Marge Smith. I think it was the 21st year, and they had to go virtual this year, and they made it 3 days, and they had 700 attendees. So it was amazing.
Yeah,
it was a lot
they did
of,
a really good job.
Yeah. It was a lot of networking. They had, a diversity, equity, inclusion panel. They had fundraising panel. They had partnerships, nonprofit, corporate partnership panel. They had all kinds of, and then breakout sessions. And it was just incredible. And another comment that Marge made. So you said something about volunteering, where you know, just do what needs to be done. But Marge has always had this saying, you know, give somebody something they love to do. And so, I mean, it doesn't have to be mutually exclusive. Like, so there's probably an opportunity out there that, you know, you'll love to do it and it needs to be done, and match those up and you're good to go.
Yeah. And that's a great point, because I think what happens too is that, nonprofits have a bad habit of looking to, like, if they need help with accounting, they look for an accountant, right? And so maybe that accountant says, look, I account all day long.
I know.
I don't want to account on my free time. I would like to work at a soup kitchen. I would like to knit scarves. I would like to work with animals, right? And so honor the fact that although you have access to professionals, it's okay if they don't want to give their time doing that thing. So, you know, I think that's important. Although we never have enough accountants, attorneys, marketing.
I know. Well, but some people are good at what they do, and they love doing what they do, and they're more efficient. You know, they're efficient because they've been doing it, and they can just do, I mean, you know, it might be a little bit different with a new organization, but they're good at it and they can crank it out a lot faster than having someone else try and learn the whole thing.
Yeah, and some companies will give or will allow that employee to give some of their work time to
volunteer time off,
which love. That's a win all around. So.
Well, there's Catch a Fire, there's Do Something, there's they're escaping me, but there's so many organizations. Oh, Volunteer Match, of course.
And
so
again,
you can plug all
the Catch a Fire is a great example, and all the ones you're talking about, of a job description, because you can't post a volunteer opportunity there until you have some information around it, right?
Until you
have some expectations and an estimated time commitment. So that's a great example of why it's important to sketch that out.
Right, and just, you know, look at your needs. And it's also just a good check internally for the organization. Like, what, you know, we're just telling people what to do and we're just freaking out. But maybe if you just take a few minutes to kind of take a deep breath and figure out, okay, what do we need? And let's put it on paper, define it, and then
it's
go find it.
It's three steps back.
Yeah, no, I know. And it's hard to do when you're a frenzy.
You know?
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of folks that are just buried in the day-to-day. It's very hard to do that. I did a presentation for a workshop last year about that very thing. Like, here's a to-do list. I literally developed an Excel spreadsheet of a when I have time to-do list. Because that's what happens is a lot of folks, you know, they can't see through the day-to-day. Or worse yet, they'll come to a Friday afternoon and realize, okay, I have 2 hours. And they don't know what to do with themselves. So here's a list of, you know, tasks that you can start to initiate.
Right. And the prioritize the must-dos versus the nice-to-have versus I can give this to a volunteer and just say go with it. You know, kind of just, you know, prioritize and organize, right? Yeah. So, I mean, but again, all that takes time. So, you know, we've all got papers and piles on our desks and it's just like weeding through. And the cool thing, though, is having an objective observer, an objective opinion, I would say. And I just did free office hours with this organization called The Purpose Collective .org or .com. I don't know. But they're started by this woman out of Colorado. And it was just so helpful because it's like going to therapy because you have someone completely objective going, all right, this is what I see you talking about. This is what this is what I would do. This is what I can tell you to do. And you know, there's so many great resources out there.
Yeah.
And we should also talk about the summit coming up, organized by Amy out of Flemington here, Amy DeVita, and it's called the Nonprofit Changemaker Summit. Top Nonprofits Changemaker Summit. That's a mouthful. But we're very excited, and so you're doing a session. I'm moderating a panel, and it's March 23rd, 24th, 25th. And I think the sign-up's available almost, but we're very excited about the keynote. So why don't you introduce who the keynote is and tell us who he is and what he does.
So the keynote speaker is Vu Lay. I believe I'm pronouncing his name correct. And he was the executive director of an organization called, I think it was called Rainier Valley Corps out in the Pacific Northwest. And his organization was very focused in getting more, improving the diversity in nonprofit leadership, which has historically been a problem and unfortunately still continues to be a problem. But Vu happens to be a hysterically funny individual combined with a staunch advocate for the nonprofit industry. And so he has a Facebook page called Nonprofit AF, and there's been a spinoff called Nonprofit Happy Hour.
I didn't know that was a spinoff.
Yeah,
oh.
And he also, and I'm not sure exactly which one came first.
No, sorry.
But he is a regular speaker on the circuit in the nonprofit world. And he is so blunt and so funny and so absolutely spot on. And for those of us who work in the nonprofit sector, we just find it really funny and encouraging because he's pointing out, you know, I talked about foundations only releasing 5% of their funds and going through these onerous grant applications. And he'll write these blog posts that are, you're just like, yep, what he said. And so he is speaking. And like I said, I have not only been following him for years, but I have heard him speak at another conference, and he's extraordinary. He has a lot of great things to say. He also serves as a pretty good reminder for the industry about things that we're not doing well, like diversity and inclusion, and that there's a lot more that we can be doing, not just on a leadership level, but also in how we serve our clients. You know, we have, unfortunately, very often a lot of white people making decisions for communities that are largely of color. So until we have representation from those communities, until we're really, really, really asking what the needs are, we can't assume what they are. And we can't assume that we're doing, you know, the fact that we've had someone review our website to make sure that we're using the right language, that doesn't mean that we're doing diversity and inclusion
No.
work. So it's at all levels, from leadership, from board and staff, all the way to, you know, who are we serving and are we serving them well, and what more can we be doing or should we be doing or thinking about. So he's really terrific. That is a huge get for Amy to have him at this conference. And to be honest with you, he makes it worth investing in this conference, along with, I mean, her lineup is
It's amazing. And the whole website's incredible.
So it's chock-a-block.
I'll post it later, but it's top nonprofits, but it's the Changemaker Summit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
in March.
So. Yeah, so it's going to be exciting. Well, and I think when I looked up his picture of Boots, he's holding like an inflatable unicorn or something. Like he's just goofy, right?
He's kind of his mascot. and he also likes pictures of animals. So, yeah, baby animals.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he's really, really terrific. Like I said, he has really great things to say, and his delivery is pretty extraordinary.
Yeah, well, that's exciting, and she's got a whole lineup, so it's going to be amazing. And talking about diversity, equity, inclusion, I know, it's definitely finally in the forefront, and people are making changes. And that was one of the things I loved about Room to Read, is that they always said it's not a bunch of Americans going over there to boss people around. Like, all of our country directors are natives. They know the culture. They know the language. Like, everyone in I think 95% of the employees are all, country natives, and they're working in the communities that they grew up in and the countries they know and, among the people they know. So that was the thing with the Newark, when Zuckerberg gave $100 million to the Newark school system, and it just was a nightmare because they brought in all these white shirts from New York City as consultants and ate up all the money. They didn't talk to the community that they were trying to help. So that was like a big...
I'll tell you, I'm going to put a little plug in for the Acumen Fund. I don't know if people are familiar with it, but the Acumen Fund was started by a woman named Jacqueline Novogratz. And they do a lot of free coursework. They have a course called Human-Centered Design. And it is exactly what we're talking about. It is the opposite of, America deciding that the way to solve India's hunger crisis is through genetically modified rice. So it is boots on the ground. And it is it's like 4 weeks, and I did it with a bunch of friends. We just did it to sort of a couple of years ago. It didn't take that much time, and it really completely alters your thought process. Instead of this top down, we can, up down sort of, we can make your lives better.
Let us help you.
and it forces you to get really, really creative. And one example is they talk about how there was a bank that wanted to redo its lobby. And so, normally you would send your marketing team or your design team out to different banks, right? They didn't. They sent them to hotels.
The
idea is that you are really just coming at things from different angles. And I just thought it was terrific. And I think that it's a discipline that we should be using more and more and more. And we have a tendency to design programs and nonprofits based on what we think should happen. It's kind of like where we started this conversation about volunteer opportunities and doing what needs to be done, not what you think should be done.
Right. And then now it's so different, and there's opportunities to be creative. And I mean, that's the other reason why I'm just so gaga over Room to Read, because it was a corporate executive with Microsoft that took social entrepreneurship, like helped birth that term and define that term as you're using your business acumen, you're being responsible for the finances, you're making smart choices that affect, that are scalable and sustainable. So, I mean, you can be a solopreneur, you can be a social entrepreneur. Like, there's all these new ways. Like, it's not, we've come a long way from the traditional United Way or the American Red Cross. There's so many opportunities for people to use creativity, which is the skill set of this century, right? You've got to think outside the box, outside the palette, and that's another good way for millennials or people coming out of college or people between jobs that are thinking about a career change. This is a good way to get your feet wet and see, maybe I'll try marketing or maybe I'll try accounting, but and I can do that through some volunteer work and say, well, would I like this,
Yeah, for sure. And I think there's a lot of project work out there. And if there isn't, then shame on these nonprofits, because if we can drip these projects out there, it's a great opportunity, like you said, kick the tires. And I love it as like I said, I had done a volunteer, pretty intensive volunteer opportunity, loved what I did, loved the mission, loved the organization, loved who I was working for, but didn't think it was going to be a good fit, and it was also a great, hey, you never know when you're out of work, try it before you buy it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's no guarantee that if you go volunteer your time that you're going to get hired, but I do think you are going to get work experience. You're going to get connections, you're going to get recommendations out of it. And I see no reason that somebody who is looking to fill a few hours a week can't say that and step up and say, look, I can do this project for you.
Right, and also people that are maybe between jobs, and once the economy gets going again and you're looking at your net, if you're side by side with another candidate who sat there and binged Netflix.
Thank you.
who took a class or improved themselves.
Absolutely.
Or went out, you know, helped their neighbor or, you know, volunteered their time. It makes a difference.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, because work is work, whether you get paid for it or not. Yeah. Semantics, right?
Yeah, no, I know, and it's definitely more fulfilling work. Well, I think there have been study after study saying the route to happiness is what you do for someone else. There's all these quotes by Gandhi and everybody else, but I mean, it's true. It's like what are you doing with your time? You should be serving others, and that is what truly makes you happy. Not your next yacht or your mink coat.
Next yacht.
I know, exactly. Well, do you remember? You hear the story about
Well,
I know, right? Well, the one evangelical pastor, whoever it was, he got all this funding for his fourth. No, not him. No, it was some other guy, but he was getting funding for his fourth. Jet, his fourth Learjet or whatever. So I was like, okay. And that was like a religious nonprofit. So be careful where you're donating. But if you want to donate to my yacht, that'd be I welcome that. We're going to take another quick break and we'll be back.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
For over 50 years, Hunterdon Medical Center has been a leader in delivering comprehensive medical and health services to our community. Our staff is committed to providing the highest quality of care to our patients. If you need a physician, we can refer you to over 300 of the best. Call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org. When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Good morning. This is Nicole Smith. You're listening to Happy to Help on Hunterdon Chamber Radio. This morning, we're talking with Colleen Dewar, and she is the founder owner of Shifting Gears Consulting. So tell people where they can find you.
So my website is literally shiftinggears.consulting. So
easy.
That's it. Very simple, very easy, and tells you a little bit about the work that I've done, the work that I can do. I work for mostly nonprofits. I can also do a lot of project work for for-profits, but, you know, I do love my nonprofit friends.
Yes, and we're doers in that we volunteer all the time, and you and I are both volunteer members of the Women's Business Forum.
Yep.
Here at the Chamber, and we've got an exciting event coming up on April 23rd. It's a morning event, so you can have your coffee and hang out. It's virtual, and it's April 23rd. We'll get the flyer and everything going out, but why don't you tell people about the two great speakers that we have lined up for that?
Yeah, we have, as a committee, really focused and honed in on a theme of resiliency for our workshops and events this year, because we just feel like, you know, we're all COVID-ed and we're done, right? But there's some really great stories about there about how to help others and help yourself. And I think those are probably the themes of the two speakers. So You know, Nicole Piazza, who owns Clean Plate Kitchen, is a really terrific example of resiliency in our area because, as we all know, the COVID really killed or crushed the restaurant industry. And Nicole did such an extraordinary job of really pivoting in the way that she served customers and got clients. She switched to a lot of delivery. And then she also created an opportunity for people to give, I believe it was $5 a person. And then with that, she would create a meal to be donated to, I mean, she delivered meals to the hospital, to care centers, senior centers, the food pantry. And it was such a great, you talk about giving an opportunity, right? So in the fundraising world, we talk about how you're not asking for money, you're giving people an opportunity. And I just think that what she did is a really beautiful illustration of that. And so as somebody who might be at home and feel a little helpless in how they can serve, now you're enabling her to do that. And in doing so, she has built up her own now delivery business of Feel Good at Home. And, you know, I don't want to assume anything about Nicole's finances or whether she did better after or before COVID. That's really her story to tell, and I'll be interested to hear from her. But I think that those of us in this area really look at her as a really terrific example of resiliency. And then our other speaker is Megan from Heartworks NJ. And I know you know Megan's story, but she had suffered a terrible loss from of a family member during 9/11. And as she was helping that family through this crisis, she was watching all of the things that were happening around this grieving family. And I believe it was things like not just meal deliveries, but you know, people would bring breakfast, people would mow the lawn, people would offer childcare. Offer rides for kids, you know, all those things that make a life run. And I think, you know, we keep kind of tying back to something that we talked about in the beginning, which is doing the work that needs to be done. And when there's a crisis, the temptation for all of us, I think, is to say, well, call me if you need me. Well, nobody who's in crisis is going to do that. And nobody who's in crisis is going to be comfortable going, you know what, it's the fall and my shrubs need to be cut back. Could you do it for me? Nobody's going to feel good about making that ask. And so what Megan did again was provide opportunities. What she's doing is encouraging us all. And if you go on her website, heartworksnj.com, you'll see there's like, I think she calls it 100 ways to give. And it's just lovely because it goes beyond, you know, making dinner. It is all the things that you don't even think about. Think about your own situation. If you were grieving, you know, what would be helpful? What is the stuff that needs to happen in your life that isn't happening? Whether it's somebody picking up a ball for you at work or spinning a plate for you with your kids or just talking.
Right. Just a connection. I mean, especially, yeah. I know my mom's alone. There's so many people that are alone right now, you know, just calling them on the phone and just chatting with them, you know, even if you're not, don't have anything to talk about because yeah, I'm sitting in my living room again. I mean, a phone call does a lot and a card, simple.
It goes back to, my uncle passed away about 2 years ago and his son was speaking at his service. And he said, you know, you all did a service and you know, the service that we provide sometimes is it doesn't seem like much, but you don't know the impact it has. You know, you talk about your mom. You know, my parents are, you know, in their house, and there's a family across the street that has two young kids. And the joy that they get from visits from those kids or just being able to see them play or whatever, you know, that mom doesn't really – she knows that my parents love them, but I don't think she understands how much that means, and how much it helps them get through a day, you know, another day of being stuck in the house. So, you know, doing a service is...
Well, and trust your gut. Like, I mean, you know, if you're like, well, maybe they'd like this. So, perfect example. So, a friend of ours, totally whacked out, he ends up having an emergency appendectomy just a couple weeks ago. And he had no idea what was going on. And, like, he literally had to drive himself to the hospital for his emergency surgery because, like, they just, you know, guys, they just put stuff off. So he's home. He's okay, whatever. I'm like, we'll go pick up your car at the hospital. We'll go get it for you so you don't have to worry about, like, you know, how am I going to get the car? But, like, yeah, you know. So I was like, exactly. Can we just go pick up your car for you? Okay. So we
huge.
Just Yeah, right? I mean, you know, it was so easy for us, whatever. And then the other story I always love is, like, you know, we talk about volunteering and getting involved and descriptions and everything, but the one I always love is this one gentleman, like, the parents worked and they were commuting and they were trying to juggle the little kids and everything and getting off. So the neighbor would just stand outside by the bus stop with the little guy while his parents went to work. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, I just
love that. That reminds me of 9/11. So on 9/11, my husband was flying to Las Vegas and was grounded in St. Louis. And, you know, if we all remember back to that time, it was Looney Tunes, right? Well, I had at that time a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. And so I was prepared. I was putting them in the car, driving them out to my parents, dropping them off there. And then my dad and I were going to St. Louis. Meanwhile, my neighbor comes over with her kids as I'm packing this car with weird things like paper towels and blankets and water. I didn't know what we were going to encounter. She goes, I'm going to take the kids and we're going to go play on your swing set. So that hour that she gave me allowed me to think about what I was putting in the car, to calm down, to relax, and to stop projecting my stress and fear onto my children.
Yeah.
So it goes back to the beginning. Do what needs to be done, right? Not what you think needs to be done.
Right. Or just ask, what could I do right now? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, but she was thinking like herself.
She was thinking
if it was me jumping in a car and driving, you know, 14 hours overnight to pick up my husband, what would I need right now? And that was the magic. That was the secret sauce.
Yeah. Right? Yep. Put yourself in their shoes.
Put yourself in their shoes and don't assume that you know what needs to be done. And sometimes maybe there's a lot of people who are grieving and there's a lot of food being. Sometimes that creates a problem, doesn't it? You know, and I've seen that happen too, is maybe that meal could be done a month later. You know, where you're thinking, where people kind of have forgotten about the situation because they've moved on to the next crisis.
Right.
Make yourself a note.
Right.
Hold the lasagna. Throw it in the freezer. Or better yet, give them a frozen lasagna to throw in their freezer for later.
Right.
You know, but I've been in those situations and sometimes there's just food coming and now you have to stop what you're doing to deal with. You know.
Yeah, well, and I think too, people say when you've had a loss, like there's always a swarm of activity around the service and like everyone's there and condolences, but then like couple weeks later, everyone's back to their life and they completely forgot about you. But this is when you're in the most critical, sad time because, you know, your loved one's gone, all the activity's gone, and now you're just stuck with your thoughts and loss. Yeah. You know, it's like, ugh. So I don't want to end on
that. For nonprofits, the equivalent for that is the influx that they get in November and December and then March, April, May, June, July, you know, when you don't have youth groups meeting or scout troops to collect those toiletries or food items, things start to go down. So, you know, don't forget about the off times, I guess, right?
Right. Well, so fun. This is your second time on the show. There's going to have to be a third because there's a gazillion things we could talk about. Yes. So thanks for coming and sharing all of your wisdom. And we'll see you soon.
It was great to talk to you. Thanks.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
You USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
Critics are complaining about the amount of executive orders penned by President Biden. In fact, he's far exceeded Presidents Trump, Obama, Clinton, and both Bushes combined. Biden defends his actions.
I want to make it clear, there's a lot of talk with good reason about the number of executive orders that I've signed. I'm not making new law. I'm eliminating bad policy. What I'm doing is taking on the issues that 99% of them that the president, the last president of the United States, issued executive orders I thought were very counterproductive to our security, counterproductive to who we are as a country, particularly in the area of immigration. This is about how America is safer, stronger, more prosperous when we have a fair, orderly, and humane legal immigration system.
President Biden is averaging two orders a day since taking office. USA Radio News.
Balance of Nature's fruits and vegetables in a capsule, changing the world one life at a time.
I had begun to notice after 10 days with Balance of Nature, I felt better, more energetic. And believe me, for me, that's something because I have energy anyway. But as old as I am, that was really something to start really noticing. You know, we're all responsible for choosing what our attitudes are, but I had a better mental outlook. I mean, I always try to be positive, but there were subtle things in me that I began to notice. I just felt a difference with this.
Get a wide variety of all your daily recommended servings of whole fruits and vegetables without having to leave your home. Right now, Balance of Nature is offering free shipping and 35% off on any new preferred order. Call 1-800-246-8751 or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code USA.
We're getting more details from Tuesday's killing of two FBI agents in Sunrise, Florida. Chris Sprouls, a Republican Florida House Speaker, tells Fox News what he knows.
You saw the FBI agents went to serve a search warrant on a child pornography case.